From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with J. Warner Wallace, author of the new book, Person of Interest: Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and J. Warner Wallace in their conversation.
One of the tired canards that gets pushed out over and over again is that Christianity is a science stopper, and here's a classic example. You have a pope, Pope Urban VIII, I believe, who believed in geocentrism at the time that you have Galileo coming out with the notion of heliocentrism. And so the Pope is now trying to retard the advance of science, which is very, very clear at that time. But he, because he's adhering to Christian principles, wants to stop the work of Galileo.
Well, what's interesting is in Galileo, you know, Tycho Brahe and Copernicus prior to Galileo had proposed these heliocentric solar systems, and had not encountered any of the kind of pushback that Galileo encountered. I mean, if you read about who Galileo was and his style, his demeanor, what he wrote about the Pope, how he approached the Pope, I mean, a lot of what happened to Galileo was based more on personality than on position. I mean, that's really, he was just a very aggressive personality, and I mean, he was under house arrest largely because of his relationship problems he had with Pope Urban VIII. But remember, Pope Urban VIII, when he held to a geocentric solar system, he was agreeing with the scientific consensus of his time. It wasn't like he held this view. No, from Aristotle all the way through Ptolemy, the people who were thinking about the nature of the solar system and looking for confirmation of this in the stars and the sky, they believed that we were in a geocentric solar system. So what you had here is a battle, which we see in science, between two scientific views of the solar system. And one ultimately wins, Galileo. Why? Because it is empirically confirmable. This is what we want science to do. Now, the fact that there may have been somebody on either side who says, well, I agree with these scientists rather than with these scientists, well, that's part of where you're going to land. You don't know you're wrong until you know you're wrong. Now, again, did it stop Galileo? He was Catholic. Does he say, you know, Catholicism, I'm done with it? No. He was a Catholic when he died. Did he stop being somebody who believed in God? No. I've quoted him several times on what he said after all of this occurred. None of this he saw as such a tension between his scientific beliefs and his religious beliefs that he needed to abandon his religious beliefs. He saw no problem between these two things coexisting. And so the story of Galileo has kind of become like the poster child for, you know, that people want to throw out there. But really, then you have to ignore every other century, every other decade of science that follows Galileo, in which Galileo looks like small potatoes compared to the number of prominent scientists who claimed a Christ. And by the way, you can reconstruct the story of Jesus by simply reading the personal letters of the most important scientists all the way into the 21st century. So all of these people from the beginning, they wrote about the natural world around them, and they also wrote about their faith and confidence in Jesus, and they repeated the Gospels, they repeated passages of the Gospels in the New Testament, and from their diaries, from their own personal writings, you can reconstruct the entire story of Jesus, including every miracle he ever worked. These miracles never gave any pause to the foremost scientists, even today. They had no problem reconciling the fact that the God of the universe could act in his creation in such a way that is supernatural, that breaks the laws, you know, that basically violates whatever they think they've established. And by the way, these are scientists who have dominated every aspect of the sciences. And I include medicine in that, because I could have separated that medicine to a chapter, because if you think about it, care for the poor and the underserved has been an area that has been dominated by Christ followers. But I was trying to only pick those aspects of culture from which I could reconstruct physically the story of Jesus. So the prominent physicians and biological sciences, those people are in my chapter on science. But the buildings that they used to use, well, science buildings for the most part get torn down and medical hospitals get torn down and rebuilt much faster than universities do because of the technology issues. And so you don't have some of the first buildings of the earliest hospitals. Those earliest modern hospitals were established by Christ followers, but I can't return to the building to see what they said.
You know, it's very interesting when you think about the advance of science. This never advances against Christian knowledge. It advances in concert with Christian knowledge. In other words, with Christian principles. And so the story doesn't end with geocentrism versus heliocentrism. As our scientific knowledge has advanced, we've learned that heliocentrism itself is false, that our solar system revolves around the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and that the Milky Way galaxy is just one of perhaps a trillion galaxies in the visible universe.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's not as though Galileo has the complete picture of what's happening in our universe and how our solar system behaves in our universe. So again, have we learned a lot more since Galileo? Of course. And by the way, who has led the charge in that? Mostly Christ followers. The other group that does well in terms of Nobel Prizes for the sciences, they are disproportionately large, is Jewish scientists. So it's about 60%+ of award winners are Christian. Almost 30% are Jewish. But the number of people who openly claim an atheistic or agnostic worldview is only about 10-15%. It's very small compared to the other groups. And that's interesting to me. As a matter of fact, if you look at the data that's out there, very few of us globally deny the existence of some kind of higher power or God. It's a very small percentage. It may feel like media and social media, for the most part, is sometimes dominated by non-believers, and they can also be some of the loudest people on social media. I feel like, wow, you know, like it's all non-believers. No, to be honest, polling still shows that that's a small group. Globally especially, it's a very small group. Even today, people who think about the nature of the world around us end up stepping into metaphysical ideas that begin to parallel theistic principles. I talk about that in one chapter as well, because it seems like we are inclined. It's hard to deny what seem to be reasonable inferences based on evidence. So if you look at the Christian history of science, you'll see that these are people who are trying to make sense of what is God revealing to me in the natural environment. And that sense of devotion is what always guided them.
So what about the Jesus worldview serves as a catalyst for science? I mean, how does Jesus end up igniting a scientific revolution?
Yeah, and so it's hard sometimes to talk about some of this stuff, because I want you to see the charts really show it, where it explodes. But first of all, one of the things that you saw very early is that Jesus followers had a sense, because Jesus established this, that matter was good. In other words, you see a lot of the non-canonical authors have this Gnostic view that matter is somehow evil and is contaminatory. You know, the whole world is actually non-material, and material is maybe an illusion. This idea, and this goes back quite a bit, I mean, Pythagoras held a view that numbers rather than matter were really the kind of the true nature of the universe, right? I mean, and then you've got a number of other ancient thinkers, even Plato, for example, argued that forms, like beauty as a form, were more real than the material objects that imitated the form. So you see a lot of this kind of denial that matter itself. Now think about it. Can you do science in an experimental setting if you think that matter is somehow illusory, or it's not the true nature of reality, is not anything material? Because most of what you're going to be doing in a laboratory is acting on material outcomes, right? You're going to see what happens when I do this. What is the material consequence for this? And that's something you wouldn't be able to do if you hold a view that matter is not worthy of study. Another one, for example, is that if you look at the illustrations of ancient mythologies and read the stories of the ancient mythologies, here's what you're going to find. Most of these ancient gods act like fallen humans, and they are stealing the wives of people on Earth. They are involved in debauchery and drunkenness and all kinds of misbehavior. The gods are not always orderly, that's for sure. But Christ followers believe that the whole world was the product of a singular, orderly, rational God. And if you've studied ancient mythologies, you will have a hard time finding cultures that believed in a singular, orderly, rational God. And so it's hard to say you could study the creation of irrational disorderly beings and find any order that you could trust. It will show you the kind of pattern reflection. You could say, okay, well, if this happens here, it's going to happen over there. That kind of scientific investigation is really dependent upon the idea that God is a singular, orderly, rational God. So if you introduce that idea, now you've got an opportunity to actually study the creation of that God in a singular, orderly, rational way. So there's a number of these kinds of igniters, right, that are different about Christianity. Even the idea that God is distinct from his creation. You know, God is not the creation itself, he is distinct. You know, and also the whole idea of being distinct and irrational is important. Let's say, for example, you're trying to study lightning. Well, how do you just know it's not Zeus, you know, throwing lightning bolts? Or how you're trying to study tidal motions or currents in the ocean. Well, how do you know it's not just Poseidon who is having a bad day? I mean, there are some things that really have to be in place in your theistic worldview before you can make sense of your material world. And these are some of the things that I talk about in the book that just form a foundation from which science is done today.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with J. Warner Wallace. Can the truth about Jesus be uncovered, even without a body or a crime scene? Join Cold Case Detective J. Warner Wallace as he investigates Jesus using an innovative and unique approach he employs to solve real missing person murder cases. In Person of Interest, Wallace carefully sifts through the evidence from history alone without relying on the New Testament. You'll understand like never before how Jesus, the most significant person in history, changed the world. To receive your copy of Person of Interest, Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or just visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal, just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive collection of the most often asked as well as most difficult questions Hank Hanegraaff has received in nearly three decades of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. This expanded edition contains new entries, leading readers to a better understanding of God and our relationship to Him in Jesus Christ. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive, handy, and attractive volume that you will return to again and again. Take your exploration of God's Word to new heights and receive the revised and updated Complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is essentially two books in one. Because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God in Christ. Simply put, the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We cheat ourselves of authentic union with Christ when we elevate the message above the Messiah. Truth Matters, Life Matters More is a modern classic and the magnum opus of one of the great theological minds of our time. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift in support of the life-changing work of the Christian Research Institute. That's 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
Case Detective Jay Warner Wallace listened to a pastor talk about Jesus and wondered why anyone would think Jesus was a person of interest. Wallace was skeptical of the Bible, but he had investigated several nobody homicide cases in which there was no crime scene, no physical evidence, and no victim's body. Could the historical life and actions of Jesus be investigated in the same way? In Person of Interest, Wallace describes his own personal investigative journey from atheism to Christianity as he carefully considers the evidence. To receive your copy of Person of Interest, Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Let's now rejoin Bible Answer Man host Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Jay Warner Wallace, in their conversation.
You started out as an atheist, you do all this examination, you become a follower of Jesus Christ, but now you believe in myth, you believe in miracles. How's that work?
Well, okay, so I'd say this all the time to people who are where I was, is that you probably already believe in something extranatural. Because if you're somebody who's thought much about cosmology, you believe we're in a universe that came into existence from nothing. Because we know that the science tells us, if you trust your science, well, then you know there was no space, time, or matter before the beginning of this universe. We're not in a universe that is infinitely old. We've got several lines of evidence that point to the fact that we are in a finite universe that had a beginning. And if there's a beginning to space, time, and matter, and because there is a beginning, you need a cause. Anything that has a beginning needs a cause. So you're in a universe that has a beginning. That needs a cause. But the cause cannot be made of space, time, and matter, which is what you've been defining as natural. Nature. Well, how we define nature as space, time, matter, acted on by physics and chemistry. But we're talking about a cause that's outside of space, time, and matter. Now we're at least saying this is something extra or supra or supernatural. It's outside of nature for the first cause of the universe. Now, the only question is that cause personal or impersonal? Now, I think it's actually, there's lots of philosophical reasons why a personal first cause makes more sense for the universe we're living in than an impersonal first cause. But let's just go with the idea, for the sake of argument, if there is a personal first cause for the universe who can bring everything into existence from nothing, that means the most amazing miracle in all of Scripture is Genesis 1. So you can get hung up over small potato miracles like walking on water and feeding 5,000. This is stuff that if I can blink everything into existence from nothing, I can probably do that too. At least hold those with an open hand, because you already believe that there's something outside of nature that caused all this. I'm just suggesting it's a personal being that has since interacted with its creation. And so I'm just asking you to kind of at least hold your skepticism with an open hand.
So the universe itself requires a universe maker. And so if you look at cosmology, you recognize immediately that miracles are necessary to make sense of the universe in which we live. The beginning of the universe, the origin of the universe, the fine-tuning of the universe, the origin of life, the natural development of life, all of this requires belief in the supernatural.
Well, look at it this way. I, as a finite human with very limited power, have the ability to deny forces of nature like gravity when I catch my pen in my hand. If there is a God of the universe that is a cause of all these things, including the consequence of gravity on space, time, and matter, why would we think he wouldn't have the power to intervene? We all have this power to intervene in some limited way. We're just suggesting that there is a being out there that does not have the restrictions of power that we have. Why wouldn't it be reasonable he could act in a much less limited way? And so I just felt like, okay, I just have to be honest with myself and say, and it really took me, this is why I wrote a book called God's Crime Scene after his cold case, because let me tell you, that first year was a doozy, and it involved me sitting down and having to wrestle with all these concepts. And I always say afterwards that I had basically a blogger's sense of what was true. So all these chapters I've written in this book, you know, when I did this 25 years ago, I would touch on it, but I wouldn't like write down where I got it from. It wasn't all sourced. There were no case notes. To go back and reconstruct it in a way that is not just a blog, you know, not just a telephone call, but actually is a book you can reference in the future, that was like tough, okay? But if you ask Susie, every day, from the moment this knucklehead said that Jesus was smart, I got a Bible, and I sat every 2 hours before I went to work every day. I was at three-day weekends because I work at 4:10, so I had 3 days every weekend, and I would spend that time absorbed in this investigation. And she will tell you, I think she must have thought I was crazy. But she started to see the outcome of this. It's really hard to embrace a claim as big as this without it having an impact on other things in your life, right? This is why Paul in his letters typically starts off making theological proclamations, but at some point it's going to move to the practical. Here's how this should look in your life. And this is really where I was too, right? So it had an outcome, which I did not anticipate. Like, I didn't really think there would be any change at all. I thought I was a good guy, you know? But as she watched that shift, she felt like she was seeing a miracle in front of her eyes. This is one of those claims that will change you, not just change the amount of information you have in your head, but it'll change the way you live your life in front of your kids, in front of your friends, at your job. It's going to change everything. So that's why, you know, be ready. This is not one of those things you add on like, you know, another layer of clothing. You're not putting on a sweater here. You're about to change everything from the ground up. And that's why it takes time, I think, for a lot of us. And be patient. If you'd have met me at 34, you'd have said, there's no way that dude's ever going to be a Christian. No way. I was just too antagonistic about Christianity and about Christians I met. A lot of them were like, I was taking them to jail. I watched them do horrific crimes. I was working in a surveillance team, and then I'd take them to jail. They would tell me they were Christians. I'm like, really? So I had a lot of stuff I had to take off. This is what Christian apologetics does so well. All we're trying to do with books like this is remove the barriers that we've built between ourselves and the gospel. And a lot of times you've built that for yourself, and you've made a decision based on what you think the culture says or what you want out of life, and you have to have that deconstructed so you can see what's true. And a lot of this, what we're doing, is just clearing shrubbery so the path is clearer. And that's a lot of, I had to do that for 8 months, 9 months, and I think it was painful at times. Because, you know, to ask someone to abandon a worldview that they have publicly articulated for years is a big ask.
You know, this is not only about going from atheism to Christianity, but I think in your book, you make the point that you can transition from the religions of the world to Christianity, and in the process you show the impact of Christ on the religions of the world.
Yeah, I tried to show a map. First of all, it's not just that he has an impact on everything that follows him. Of course, if you are establishing a world religion following Jesus, you're probably going to mention Jesus in some way. You know, in the Baha'i faith, he's a manifestation. In Islam, he's a prophet. I mean, he's got some place in all of these religious worldviews that came after Jesus. But it turns out that many of the religious worldviews that preceded Jesus and then survived into the common era, most of them didn't, well, they also modified their practices to either mimic what Christians were doing or to include Jesus in some way. So if you're a Buddhist or a Hindu, it turns out that the religious leaders in both of those categories have described Jesus as an enlightened person who becomes like a wise teacher who is consonant with their religious worldview. In other words, there's a place for Jesus within Hinduism. There's a place for Jesus within Buddhism. And that's because they have identified him as a divine, if you're in Hinduism, or as a wise teacher, as a model of moral behavior and moral teaching. So they would say that, no, Jesus is very much like other leaders or manifestations or persons within that religious tradition. Everyone hat tips Jesus. And so if you're a member of those religions and you're in a part of the world where there are no Christians, but you're in Hinduism, well, if they've ever heard about Jesus from their leaders and the global leaders in these categories, and I quote them in the book, have all made room for Jesus. At the same time, Jesus does not make room for anybody else. That's interesting, right? Like the other leaders and people groups who hold a religious worldview will accommodate Jesus in some way, but Jesus does not accommodate them in any way. He says, but I'm the only way to the Father. No one gets there except through me. So that's a very interesting, and I thought, well, okay, that's a bold claim and kind of intolerant, or it might just be that, by the way, I might have five suspects in a case. One of these guys is going to emerge as unique. The other four, they're going to have some things in common that kind of rule them out. But this one guy, he's going to have a unique set of features, a unique set of issues with the victim, a unique set of circumstances that identify him because he is not like the others. And that ends up being my true suspect. And there's a sense in which Jesus is like that, right? He is not going to accommodate others. Every other system is you attain the next level of what you hope for in life or in the next life. You attain through your good works, through something you do. Jesus is the one oddball that stands out and says, no, actually, it's what I did for you. So it's a very different kind of a system. And it stands out in such a unique way that he becomes like that suspect who doesn't match the others. So either this is just a complete train wreck of an idea, or he stands out uniquely because he is the one true story about God, the one true explanation about God compared to all the other. Back to what C.S. Lewis said, he is the true myth from the mind of God rather than the false myths from the mind of men.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest J. Warner Wallace. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. In appreciation for your crucial gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you J. Warner Wallace's new book, Person of Interest, Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.